Good morning, Nashville, Tennessee. Darren and Donick are out. The News 2 takeover has begun. It is Curtis and Kayla. Kayla and Curtis, however you want to put it. Corey Curtis, Kayla Anderson sitting in for Willie Donick and Darren McFarland. Today, for the next 4 hours. You know what the first thing Kayla Anderson said to me yesterday? Is it really 4 hours?
Yeah.
And I'm like, she doesn't sit in the office with me for that long. So 4 hours together, and then we get to go to work, Kayla.
Yes, this is a Corey and Kayla extravaganza today.
It is a big one, so thank you for joining me here today, and thank you out there for listening with us today. We have a lot to talk about. They always say, what have I said the last 3 weeks on Sports Extra? They keep telling me this is the slow time of the year. And it is absolutely not the slow time of the year.
No.
Vanderbilt is in Omaha doing Vanderbilt things at the College World Series. And the NBA draft is tonight. And it's arguably the biggest NBA draft I can remember in the city of Nashville since I moved here in 2003. So it is a big, big day. It's an exciting day, isn't it?
Yeah. No, this is, you said it's the biggest day that you've had in a while here for the NBA draft. And this is my second year here in Nashville. And this is by far the biggest NBA draft I've covered anywhere I've been in terms of just local talent or talent that's coming out of our colleges. So I'm actually really pumped, Corey.
Yeah. Well, you've got Darius Garland from Vanderbilt Brentwood Academy. You've got Jordan Bone from Ensworth in Tennessee. Admiral Schofield from Tennessee, Grant Williams from Tennessee. You've got Dylan Windler from Belmont. And let's not forget about Garrison Matthews from Lipscomb, who could get picked tonight because the fact is the guy can score with the basketball. And even if he doesn't get picked, somebody is going to take a shot on him and start to try to develop him for the next level because he can score and he's got range. It's going to be fun to watch these guys come off the board.
Yeah, it is. And I think first and foremost, we're looking forward to Darius Garland coming off the board because we know he's going to come off the board probably in the top five, Corey, is what we're guessing.
And somebody's probably going to trade up to do it.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. I mean, there are a number of teams. I think the Bulls, the Celtics, I'm forgetting another one. That's Timberwolves.
Minnesota.
In the mix, talking about trading up and getting him. But Cleveland could want him. Shoot, the Pelicans could want him. I mean, who do the Pelicans have a point guard right now? They got Lonzo Ball.
They got Lonzo. You can count Drew Holiday as a guard, but he's more so, he can play shooting guard as well.
Sure.
So.
Well, and that's the thing is, if you brought in Darius Garland, those two guys could really play off each other like C.J. McCollum and Damian Lillard.
Absolutely.
Where they both can handle the ball, they both can score. That would not be a bad tandem. And you could jettison Lonzo Ball and his non-shooting ability to somebody else.
And his injuries, too, because he is coming back from an injury. So that's something that the Pelicans definitely got to take into account, especially if they're going to get a point guard.
Well, and his dad's a total knucklehead. I mean, look, the Lakers got rid of him for a reason. And it was more, you know, when the Lakers made that trade, part of it was jettisoning some guys who weren't going to fit in the future because LeBron had completely turned his back on them. And those guys hadn't won anything. I mean, those guys have not won anything. They didn't develop. They didn't win games. They were soft. And the Lakers moved on from them and got an all-world player. So, you know, it's kind of what had to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if Lonzo Ball is not in New Orleans very long. So we'll wait and we'll see on that. But very excited to see where all those guys wind up tonight. We're going to delve into a lot of that in this show. Casey Alexander, the new head coach at Belmont, former head coach at Lipscomb, is going to join us at 11 o'clock. We'll talk about Garrison Matthews and Dylan Windler with him because, of course, he coached Garrison, coached against Dylan Windler a lot. So he just knows a lot about him. We'll also have Mike Wilson on from the Knoxville News Sentinel to talk about those Tennessee guys. Andrew Doak is going to join us from WWL-TV in New Orleans. The Pelicans, of course, pick first. But they're also going to have the fourth pick, and the rumors are they could trade it. So they could wind up with, 17 first-round picks tonight.
Yeah.
Doesn't Atlanta pick 8 and 10?
Yeah, so the talk is that Atlanta wants to try to move up in the draft. Now, I don't know if this is to get Darius Garland. I don't know if this is to get R.J. Barrett or maybe a guy like Jarrett Culver. But they're trying to trade their two picks, their 8th and their 10th pick, for the fourth pick. So we'll see how that plays out.
So what if New Orleans picks 1-8 and 10? I mean, holy cow.
That's insane.
Yeah, I mean, for the fact that you traded your best player and all of a sudden you get Zion Williamson, who's the best player in this draft, and then you get not one, not two, but three top 10 picks, lottery picks at that. That's pretty amazing.
And you also got three other players.
And you also got three other players in the process, and Brandon Ingram,
who was a lottery pick. Lonzo Ball, who's a lottery pick.
And then you got Josh Hart, who's going to play.
Who's probably better than the both of them.
Yeah, Lonzo Ball was Josh Hart's actually a really good player coming off the bench for the Pelicans.
Like Josh Hart. He's a sneaky DraftKings fantasy play because he's not that expensive and he can put up numbers.
I like that.
It's the rebirth of New Orleans. Night.
When you say you gutted your team, you killed your team by trading away Anthony Davis, there is a lot to be excited about when you can bring in a haul like that. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. So we've got a lot of people to talk about the NBA draft with tonight. There's also a chance we could hear from somebody from Darius Garland's camp. Mm-hmm. Winston's his dad. So we'll see if we get a call in from those guys as well. We'll talk to Tim Corbin coming up at 10:15. We'll talk a little bit about Vanderbilt's most recent victory in a second. He's going to be calling us in about 9 minutes. And then we'll have Robbie Stanley from NHL.com because the NHL draft is tomorrow. And I'm just going to tell you guys, I think the Preds are going to make some fireworks.
I think there's going to be some things that are going to happen.
I mean, I think fireworks. I think bombs are going off. I think, because look, I think they're very unhappy about last year.
Clearly.
I think there's reason to be unhappy about the direction of where this team is headed in the way they look. And I think they need to set off a few bombs to get it set off in another direction. And so I think there's a lot to talk about there, a lot to get excited about, and a lot to watch. Now, the Vanderbilt baseball team, Kayla, takes down Mississippi State 6-3. Kumar Rocker, 6 innings, 1 run. Fantastic again.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's pick a guy in the lineup every game for them. Steven Scott, 2 homers, just 2 absolute jacks as they beat a really good team in Mississippi State.
It's crazy to me because if you know Omaha and you know kind of the history behind just that park and everything, I know it's newer, it's not the original, but you know that it's a park that's hard to hit out of. Okay. So it doesn't play friendly to teams like Vanderbilt that put up high scoring numbers, but they've completely come in there and said, yeah, well, we don't really care about that, because Austin Martin started things off in that first game against Louisville with 2 home runs.
First pitch of the game.
We've got Steven Scott, who added to the list with his 2 home runs last night. It's almost like it's just not a thing for Vanderbilt. They come in there, they have different guys step up on different days.
They're so loaded.
And it doesn't matter who it is in the lineup. Someone's going to step up, and those guys are confident in that. So that's why I think it helps out, because if one guy's having a crappy night, the other guy's going to step it up.
Well, look, they're going to play the winner of today's Louisville-Mississippi State game. That game will be then on Friday at 6 o'clock. They can lose that game.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But I don't think they can lose 2 in a row.
No.
I mean, I can't remember the last time they lost 2 in a row.
No.
the run this team is on,
Corey,
is absolutely ridiculous.
Listen to this. They lost 3 times since April 7th. 33 wins in the last 35 games.
Wow.
That's almost, it's almost hard to fathom
33
in baseball.
33-2. Playing out of the Southeastern Conference. Yeah. I mean, they didn't lose a game at the SEC tournament.
Nope.
They didn't lose a game at the regional.
Nope.
Now, they lost one at the Super Regional.
Mm-hmm,
so they did lose one there. And then, of course, they got a perfect game for 19 strikeout, no-hitter from Kumar Rocker.
From The Rock.
Which is unbelievable. Unbelievable. They are playing on a whole new level. I think that is pretty safe to say. And it's pretty exciting because all they have to do is win one more to make it to that championship series.
Yeah.
And then they just got to win 2 out of 3. And again, it's hard to believe anybody is going to beat them 2 out of 3. But you love that Michigan pitching staff.
Yeah, I was watching Michigan the other night, and I didn't know, I'll be the first to admit, I came from Big Ten area up in Columbus, but I didn't pay much attention to Michigan baseball. I mean, it's just not something that's big
up
there.
Not since Barry Larkin.
Exactly. Which Barry does the broadcast.
I think, oh, does he?
Yeah, because they were talking about the last time he was there. Michigan was there. But yeah, I just didn't pay attention to Michigan baseball, but I watched them the other night, Corey. And, I mean, this team has some legit pitching.
It only takes one hot starter and then a fluke, and suddenly, you know, you've lost a series that you should have won.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be something to certainly look out for. But, I mean, Vanderbilt's got to be the favorite at this point.
I would think so.
They've got to be the favorite. Yeah. And J.J. Bleday.
He had a good night.
What, did he have 3 more hits yesterday?
He went 3 for 4.
3 for 4, a double, RBI double,
RBI double.
2 singles, professional hitter. I mean, just – continues to absolutely rake. And I think, you know, from the get-go, their first swing's a home run. You know, I told Tim Corbin a long time ago, back when David Price and Pedro Alvarez were here and they lost to Michigan.
Oh, really?
In the regionals. Yeah, like a 180 hitter took David deep, and they didn't make it out of the regional. And I told him, I said, look, you're going to get to Omaha.
Yeah.
And once you do, you're going to go a lot.
Right.
I saw the same thing when I used to cover South Carolina. They had teams with Ray Tanner that were loaded, and they came up short. They just, in whatever reason, the regionals were constructed a little differently then, but for whatever reason, they just weren't getting through. And it was a great frustration because they had the number one team in the country and didn't make it.
Yep.
And once they got through, what happened? They went 3 years in a row to the championship and won two
had
of them.
A good team, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, I mean, it's getting to Omaha, it's a massive hurdle. But once you get over that mental hurdle, it's different. And this team never had that hurdle because of the teams before it. They understand that Omaha is just where they belong.
Yeah. It's crazy to think this is the mindset of young guys, this young, that Corbin's done such a good job of kind of just doing the mind thing with them first before it comes to play, because that's what this team does. I mean, they don't get phased. They really don't, Corey. I mean, these kids do not. You saw Kumar after that shutout, no-hitter. He acted like it was just a normal day.
Well, he said yesterday, he said, I had to put it behind me. He said, and I just had to think about winning this game. And I knew if I did that,
right,
we'd be good.
Well, he's signing autographs and all that.
Yeah.
You know, he
threw 130 pitches. I think that was the bigger concern. But he got an extra day's rest, so that didn't hurt either.
Right.
But we're going to have Tim Corbin coming on next to talk about just what his team has done and where they are going. We've got a big show coming up, as I said. If you want to join the show at some point later today, 615-737-1025. That's the number to call. But up next, it's Tim Corbin, head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores. This is Corey Curtis and Kayla Anderson sitting in for Darren and Donick. You're listening to Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 1025, The Game.
Infante calls it. Game over. Vanderbilt a winner. They go to 2-0 and are now one win away from a College World Series finals.
Pretty impressive. Kumar Rocker, a week off of 130 pitches, goes out and puts Vanderbilt in the spot to go 2-0.
Corey Curtis, Kayla Anderson back at 102.5 The Game, filling in for Darren and Donick on this fine Thursday midday portion of the day. That, of course, the final out of yesterday's 6-3 Vanderbilt victory over Mississippi State at the College World Series. We are joined now by a man who's just racking up those CWS victories. That's the head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores, Tim Corbin. Coach, congratulations. How many CWS wins is that for you now? Do you even keep track?
No, I don't know that.
it's two. That's the most important number this year.
We got that one yesterday, and now we want to try to get the next one on Friday, so that matters most.
Well, they're all big victories, Coach, I mean, in Omaha, because you want to stay out of that loser's bracket. But the simple fact is now somebody's got to come back and beat you two times in a row. You didn't want to have to come back and beat Mississippi State two times in a row. Can you quantify how big yesterday was in this journey?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, it was really big just because our game got moved from Tuesday to Wednesday. And because if it's a rain day, then coming back from loser's bracket means that you would have had to play yesterday, today, Friday, and then potentially Saturday if you wanted to win. So it's a lot of baseball. And it's a lot of mileage on your pitchers, and it's a lot of bullets. Could you do it? Yeah. I mean, anyone can do it, obviously. It's been done before. But at the same time, if you have your pick and you want to minimize bullets, then – You want to try to do everything you possibly can to win yesterday, and we were fortunate to do so.
Well, Kumar was coming off a 130-pitch performance. Did the extra day help him a little bit?
I'm sure it did. I'm sure he needed that day to recover. But at the same time, he's very controlled about what he's doing in between. He sets himself up for success by how he centers himself in between. And from that standpoint, he's a professional. He's more mature than most. And He just gives himself an opportunity to compete well once he gets into that moment. He's a durable kid, and he's taking care of his arm really well.
Coach, Kayla Anderson here. How are you?
I'm doing good, Kayla.
Austin Martin, two home runs versus Louisville. Steven Scott yesterday, two home runs, obviously, versus Mississippi State. Steven said, you know, hitting is contagious. How true is that in something like this, in a tournament that's so big?
Well, it is contagious, but I think in this tournament right here, hits are tough to come by. I think we take hits away from the opponent, and they take hits away from us because of our familiarity of playing teams like that before. So those times where you get guys on base and you're looking for hits, they're expensive. They're very difficult to come, and it's not like, you know, getting that hit during the course of the regular season is a little bit different than getting that hit right now because the execution of both teams against one another. So we did what we had to do. We got the big hit against Louisville with Marty's home runs, and we certainly got the big hit yesterday, hits, I should say, plural, with Scotty because he got two, and JJ's hit too. That double into the gap kind of broke things open, and certainly when you get offense like that, it kind of loosens your team up a little bit.
And how much does it help? We've heard the guys say this before, but just to know, maybe if it's not their day, they know and have the confidence that the guy behind them or in front of them is going to be able to step up.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the definition of a TEAM. I mean, if you've got something like that, then you've got people and parts that all know that, you know, they've got each other's back, you know, in a certain situation. It's picking a teammate up when he might not be able to get the job done on the mound or at the plate, and that's what we've been able to do. So, you know, I look at our order just as nine people, nine mm-hmm. individuals who carry out their skill sets to the best of their ability, and I don't look at them as any greater than the other. I just look at them as all very good at what they do, and we just ask of them just to kind of do what they can do during the moment, and they perform pretty well as a group.
You're kind of talking about the culture, I think, that you've built there. And I know Steven Scott did the interview with ESPN after the game, and I loved, you know, his answer when he was asked about moving from catcher to the outfield this season and, you know, why he came back. And he just said, I wanted to be with my teammates for another year. I mean, I think that's, you know, incredible talent, number one, but ultimately your guys just love being together.
Well, I think they do, and I appreciate that. And it's just trying to create an environment where they can enjoy one another. I think it's people and place. And when the place is predictable and it's consistent, then the people inside the place have a chance to be predictable and consistent and enjoy themselves. And I think that's, you know, our role as staff members and trying to create that for the kids, because as a staff, everyone has a part. And I'm not talking about just the coaches in the dugout. I'm not talking about strength coach and trainer. I'm talking about everyone. Everyone has a playing piece of this. And what they're trying to do is just create the best environment possible with the least amount of drama so the kids can enjoy it. And I think that's what you try to do in your home with your family, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Do you know what you're going to do tomorrow night, or does it matter who you play?
Well, no, it you know, I say that they're both really good teams. So I think I don't, you know, as I'll tell the kids later today, you just don't utilize any energy that way. You've got to prepare yourself for whoever you're going to play. And at that point right there, then we'll turn our attention to that team. But right now it's a one game tournament for us. If we had lost, it would be a one game tournament. And if we win, it's a one game tournament. So we'll just take it as it comes.
I think Chris Budden was interviewing Steven Scott after the game, and she said, you know, you guys don't show all the time that you're having a lot of fun, but you guys clearly are because you're winning, and that's what matters. What is this team, because they come across as just such a mature group. How do these guys let loose, you know, maybe when it's not game time and you guys can come out and really show your personalities outside of the game?
Oh, well, Kayla, they're college kids. But they're professional.
Yeah.
They're mature. They just handle themselves appropriately. And I think, you know, as you proceed through being 18, 19, 20 years old, I was not that mature. I wasn't mature like them. So I'm just watching them and just, you know, I'm I'm glad for them that they're making choices and decisions that they won't be embarrassed by 10, 15 years from now. And I think that's the most important thing. They do have a lot of fun with one another. But, you know, it's like we're at breakfast right now. It's very quiet. They're just kind of doing their thing. Bus ride home last night, nothing. No one was saying a thing. Bus ride to the park, no one was saying a thing. I mean, they haven't dogpiled yet. But, you know, it's not like they're not enjoying themselves. They have a lot of fun. I think they're very comfortable in their own skin. And that's why I just don't think they look at anything as grand. And, you know, the one thing that they want to accomplish, but they would never say this, is, you know, just being able to finish something that you started. And I think at that point right there, then you probably would see more elation than what you've seen up to this point.
Yep.
Corey Curtis, Kayla Anderson on with Vanderbilt head baseball coach Tim Corbin. Coach, the last thing I want to ask you about, back when you and I were both much younger young men, you know, you had some heartbreak in the NCAA tournament. And I told you, you're going to get to Omaha, and once you do, you're going to go a lot. How has it changed for you after that first trip? Because you're going a lot now.
Well, first of all, yes, you did say that, because we were talking about your South Carolina experiences, and I remember everything.
It's so close, Coach. It looks exactly the same. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, you know what, Corey? When you don't get there, it looks so far away. You know, it's like you're going to die in regional purgatory. You know, you just don't ever think you're going to take that next step. But once you get here, what happens is, like Ray and South Carolina, and like LSU and Skip Bertman and so many other teams, is the kids just have they seem to grow into that personality where they can contain their emotions enough to play well enough in those environments. And I think the thing that you have to tackle the most, and I'm very thankful that the kids have done it. First time was 2011. Second time was 2014, and then this was the fourth time. But those three instances right there, teams had never been here before. Our teams had never been here before. So just to contain their emotions and get to playing the game the way they can is probably the most important thing. But we're thankful for it, and you know, hopefully we set a bar for the kids coming in and say, I want to be part of something like that too, and the older kids can certainly help with the communication of how those things are done. But it starts in August, and it's kind of a gradual climb as you move up to this point right now.
Well, you have a special team. I mean, we've seen you have a lot of really good teams, and this team is certainly right there with it. They are a lot of fun to watch. And you know what? Your team and yourself, you're always easy people to root for, and it's a lot of fun for all of us in Middle Tennessee. So good luck the rest of the way. We look forward to seeing how many more victories? Five or three? Three more victories?
One more.
You didn't get him, Corey.
I threw it out there. Coach, good luck tomorrow
night.
Coach. Thanks for your time.
Corey, thanks so much. And Kayla, Maggie says hello. Thank you both.
Tell her hello.
Maggie Corbin, of course, the head coach's wife. And Kayla, you sat down with her. And, you know, we talked quite a bit there about culture. And the culture all starts with the head coach and his wife. I mean, really, that's what the whole thing's built around.
Absolutely. When you have a program where everyone buys in, not just the players, but like Coach said, everyone, the trainers, everybody has to buy in. And credit to Corbs and Maggie, because Maggie has been such a big part of this from day one. Really quickly, I don't know if I told the story, but Maggie said the day that she got there, they had a game and there was maybe five people in the stands.
Oh, yeah.
And she got there and was like, Corbs, did we make the right decision?
Well, they used to have like wood stands,
right?
Like wood bleachers, and there was a chain link fence at the outfield, and this big like light bulb scoreboard up over the left field wall, which is was about 280 feet away. I mean, it looked like a high school park.
Sure.
I mean, you know what it looks like now?
Yeah, it's
and
gorgeous.
That's all Tim Corbin. I mean, that's not Vanderbilt. That's Tim Corbin.
And Corey, I have followed this team like way before I even got here. That's how much, if you're a baseball person, you know about Vanderbilt. I mean, you just know who they are.
It's like LSU and Texas. You just know.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about what we just talked about with the head coach and his Vanderbilt Commodores when we return. We're also giving away a pair of tickets to see my man, Michael Bublé, one of my wife's favorites, at Bridgestone Arena on Friday, July 19th. They said I can give them away any way I want.
Oh.
I'm just going to make it simple. It's the News 2 Takeover. Second caller, you get the tickets.
Look at that.
Second caller, 615-737-1037. 102.5 The Game. Good luck to you. Get those tickets and stick around because we've got more to talk about. Vanderbilt baseball, NHL draft, Nashville Predators, NBA draft. We'll probably talk some Titans somewhere along the way because I just frankly can't help myself.
Corey loves the Titans.
So it's absolutely going to happen. Corey Curtis, Kayla Anderson sitting in for Darren and Donick. You're listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Nobody else here is pitched in Omaha immediately after throwing a no-hitter. You have, what's that pressure like of carrying that into Omaha? And what did you do to prepare to follow up a no-hitter thrown in Omaha for the first time?
Yeah, the no-hitter. I moved forward from that. I couldn't think of that while on the mound. I knew if I went out there and tried to win, that things would go good for me. And with Steven at the plate and JJ catching fire, it was a good game.
Corey Curtis and Kayla Anderson, and that was Kumar Rocker. This is one of the best songs of all time, by the way.
I mean, which version, though? Are we talking Aerosmith, Run DMC, just Aerosmith?
No, Aerosmith, Run DMC, okay. Because that was when rap first started to go mainstream. It was a huge moment, and it's an amazing music video as well. I know the youngsters today don't probably know what music videos even are. But that was amazing. That was an amazing music video, and that was an incredible song, and it still is. But that was Kumar Rocker after his victory last night against Mississippi State, in which he went six innings giving up just one run, and that one run wasn't until the sixth inning, and he was dominant again. I mean, a true freshman throwing 95 miles per hour. I mean, look, his dad's Tracy Rocker. He's a huge dude.
Sure.
So Kumar Rocker, guess what? He's a huge, big, strong kid who came back from a 130-pitch performance. Kayla, I thought one of the big moments in that game was when he gave up the hit in the first inning because it just, you know, he was asked about the no-hitter. That got all the no-hitter talk gone immediately.
Yes.
Immediately. Because if he's carrying a no-no through three, then that's all anybody's talking about.
Absolutely.
Is he going to do it again? So he gets in a jam on the first inning, puts two on with one out, and gets a strikeout and a pop-up, and after that just mows him down. So I thought that first inning, to have that little bit of adversity, to get that out of the way, I thought it was a good start for Vanderbilt. And then they gave him the run support and owned it from there.
Yeah, it's funny because I think ever since that no-hitter, the media has just blown up. We've all seen Kumar this year and seen how well he's pitched.
Well, but I mean, he's got the name, so nationally there's appeal to that.
Sure, and he's a big kid, so he sticks out on the mound.
He wears 80.
I know, right?
That's just weird.
But this, I mean, he has gotten just media. I mean, I heard he was just signing autographs in Omaha. Everywhere you go, here's this kid who just pops out and it's Kumar Rocker. But I think, like you said, it was good just allowing that run, just to shake it off and just be like, okay, or the hit, excuse me, just to shake it off and be like, okay, I don't have to worry about this anymore in terms of people just being like, okay.
And also to know I'm not facing Duke. This is Mississippi State.
Exactly. It's a total different game. I just love how he handles himself and we spoke about this earlier. He's the kid of an athlete.
Yes.
And these parents have done a heck of a job raising him because he is so young, and to handle what he's handled already, it's just impressive to me.
Yeah, and you know the whole team is impressive because they all have that expectation to win no matter who they're playing, and they don't get flustered. You know, there was a moment in that game, you know, they were up 6-0. And Mississippi State rallies 6-3.
I got flustered.
I said you were kind of tweeting, and I was going to pull you away from your computer and tell you everything's going to be okay. You know, you're in Omaha. Mm-hmm. Your lead starts slipping away from you. You can get flustered. That team didn't get flustered at all.
No, that's what it is. It's impressive to me that there's, and we talked to Coach about this, that they're so young. I wanted to bring up this because just speaking of how dominant Kumar Rocker has been, I thought this was a cool stat. So in 21.2 innings in the NCAA tournament so far, the opposition has scored two runs, managed just 12 hits, and he has struck out batters 33 times. That's worth getting some note for, right?
Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, what was he drafted in the 30-whatever-th round out of high school?
Out of high school.
That's because he probably told people, you're not going to sign me.
So they
just took a flyer on him late. But now he's looking like a top 10 pick.
Yep.
Another one. Another one in black and gold. Mm-hmm. And we got him for two more years.
That's crazy.
that is absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. And, you know, with where he pitched, he should, if they make it to the finals, mm-hmm. he should be able to come back and start one of those two or three games. Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, I want to congratulate Roger Bernard from Hendersonville, who's a happy guy because he's making his wife a happy lady.
All right.
He won the tickets to Michael Bublé at Bridgestone Arena on Friday, July 19th. This is Corey Curtis and Kayla Anderson. We're filling in for Darren and Donick on this fine Thursday. Where are they, Marquise?
Yeah.
Well, Willie is out in Omaha.
Watching
the Vandy Boys. Willie's a Vanderbilt grad and played baseball at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
So he's out there, and Darren is on a boys' trip with Chase Macababe, who's also on that trip as well.
Wow, that's...
That's scary.
That's a scary trip.
Yeah. The only one missing from that trip is Sasquatch. I mean, that's a scary trip.
Yeah, so I'm kind of glad I didn't get invited, even though I'm not cool enough to get invited. I'm not cool enough to get invited with them just yet, but I'm kind of glad I didn't.
Well, we are here today and tomorrow because their trips will last one more day, and we are grateful for the invite and for the opportunity.
Very grateful.
To talk. And you know what else I'm grateful for? That I can watch Vanderbilt baseball and not have to listen to the Whistler.
You know, I told you, I don't really have a problem with it. Okay, everybody does not agree with me, and I understand. But here's the thing. I guess I just zoned it out.
Probably, because you've heard it so much.
I've heard it so much.
Yeah.
But my point is, like, I know some of the Louisville players were complaining about it, but...
Which is the last thing you should do.
Right. The Whistler does this when Vandy is up to bat, and they have no issue with it.
Yeah. Here's my issue. I don't like it when people do things just because they know it annoys people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he is goaded on by the
fact... So you think he's doing it just...
Oh, yeah, he likes the attention. I've never met the guy. I've never talked to the guy. But look, when everybody is telling you to stop and you're just doing it,
mm-hmm.
it's because you want to do it. Mm-hmm. You're flaunting it. I mean...
Well, especially now. I mean, once he got the headlines, I think he was like, let's run with it.
Yeah, and so that's why I talk about him very little. Because I don't like to
give
him, because I don't like to give more credit and more time than I should.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just glad I can watch some baseball and hear the crowd, hear the crack of the bat, and not have to turn the volume down because I don't want to listen to it.
By the way, on ESPN.com, this is a top headline.
Yes, it is.
It is a top headline. Yep. Top five.
Because it gets clicks. That's why.
It's so funny, though.
I mean,
but not Vandy's victory going 2-0. It's
well, I mean, look.
The Whistler.
The College World Series on the national landscape isn't that big of a story.
Mm-hmm.
But a guy who annoys everybody is.
And he's clearly got his... 20 minutes of fame here.
Well, I think it's lasted longer. Every time they keep going back, he keeps getting his moment again. And so he got it again, but he's being shut out now. I'm very interested to see who starts showing up at some of those Vanderbilt games. You know, it's a shame that a lot of more of the professional players can't be there.
Yeah, because you know the whole team would be there. The former teams.
How many guys does Corbs have in the majors now? He's got David Price. He's got Sonny Gray, Kurt Casale, both on the Reds. Flaherty,
mm-hmm.
Tony Kemp.
God, I forgot about Kemper.
With the Houston Astros. Walker Buehler with the Dodgers. Don't the Braves have a right-hander from Vanderbilt? Oh, Mike Minor with the Texas Rangers.
Is there 13 of them? Or something?
There's a ton, and that's why I say I'm going to forget some because mm-hmm. there are so many right now.
Yeah,
I mean it's really pretty spectacular, and that doesn't include Pedro Alvarez, who I don't think is in the league. Right now, but has had a run, and I think has over 100 career homers. But he's had a lot of guys go, and he's lined up. Oh, Tyler Beebe, he's up with the San Francisco Giants. You know who else is up with the Giants? Mike Yastrzemski. I don't know if he's still up or not, but he got called up this year. You know, and he was just kind of a low power average hitter. Out of the outfield, and you just thought he was going to be a nice college player, but he has kept his career alive.
He's had success.
And made it to where he's even got called up, even hit a homer.
Yeah.
And he, of course, is, I think, Carl's grandson,
mm-hmm.
which is awesome for Major League Baseball. I mean,
absolutely.
It's an unbelievable story. But look, I mean, he is... There are other great coaches in college baseball, but it's hard to say any of them are better than Tim Corbin.
Yeah.
I mean, and what he's done and where he started it from.
Well, that's the most impressive part, too. And he's learned from some really good coaches as well along the way. And he's done it the right way. But, yeah, out of all the college coaches I've covered, which is a lot, he is by far just the one that I'm around. I feel like I'm around greatness. I know that seems kind of cheesy to say.
No.
But coming from a baseball mind, you know, I just think that he's special.
He is special. And any coach, I mean, any team in the country, I mean, look, LSU's gone after him. Auburn's gone after him. I think Texas went after him. Mm-hmm. I mean, they all want him, and there's a reason they want him, because he's the best.
Yep.
And that's all there is to it. All right, Corey Curtis and Kayla Anderson in for Darren and Donick. Marquise, we're going to go off the grid in the next segment, okay? Earlier this week, I wrote about the Tennessee Titans, and
yes.
I was picking the two best players of this decade, okay? Best offensive and mm-hmm. best defensive players. It's on my Facebook page at WKRN Corey Curtis if you want to go back and read it before we come back here. But we're going to kind of break down who the candidates were, who the winners were for me. And if you want to chime in with who you think it is of the best decade, not since they became the Titans, but we're talking 2010 till now, you can phone in at 615-737-1025. And we will try and get your opinion as well. That's coming up next. Corey Curtis, Kayla Anderson in for Darren and Donick. You're listening to Nashville's Best Sports Talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thursday rolls on in Nashville, Tennessee. Corey Curtis, Kayla Anderson from WKRN News 2 filling in for Darren and Donick on 102.5 The Game on this midday. If you want to go to this year's ESPYs, how about playing an Apex Legends Pro-Am event with two big names? Go to ebay.com/ESPN to donate for a chance to win. It's all benefits the V Foundation for Cancer Research. Go to ebay.com/ESPN for more information and complete rules. You can do that. We are going to take 10 minutes to talk about the Tennessee Titans. I have been covering the Titans since 2003.
I wasn't even graduated yet.
Which makes me old. And it also means I've watched a lot of bad football. Because they've had a lot of bad teams.
That's okay.
But they've also had some good teams.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget three straight winning seasons. That's not easy to do, whether it's 9-7 or 11-5. Look, they've won more than they've lost, and that is the most important thing. But this week, I was looking at this important question that's just going to change the world. Who are the Titans' best players of this decade? Because mm-hmm. there's only 1 year left in this decade. I broke it down one day. I wrote about the offense.
Yep.
And then the next day, I wrote about the defense. And so we will start with the offense. And, you know, as I looked at the stats and everything, you know, a number of names quickly came to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, there was Chris Johnson. You know, Nate Washington was a steady player for this team who could provide the big play at times, and I would call him the best receiver for this team of this decade. Delanie Walker, unquestionably the best tight end for this team of this decade. So you got Chris Johnson, Nate Washington, Delanie Walker, and Taylor Lewan, I view as the best offensive lineman for this team of this decade and has become
by far.
And you know, Michael Ruse played in this decade too, and he was a very good player.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Taylor Lewan is even better than him. And we could throw Marcus Mariota into the conversation. Had a good rookie year, had a very good second year, but he's had his ups and his downs in years 3 and 4. It quickly became a three-team race to me with Delanie, Taylor, and Chris Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the important thing with Chris Johnson was it didn't include 2008 and 2009. Those were his first 2 years. Those were the years he exploded onto the scene. And really, he was just never the same. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I think you do. I think in 2010, he went for 1,346 yards.
He did.
And so he made the Pro Bowl that year.
Mm-hmm.
He never made the Pro Bowl again.
Isn't that crazy?
And what were his yards per carry in those seasons following that?
Okay, so 2011?
Because like I'm going to tell you, in 2008 and 2009, he averaged like 4.9 and 5.6.
4.3 in 2010.
Okay,
4 yards per carry in 2011.
That's not special.
No. And then back to 4.5.
Okay, that's better.
In 2012, and then 2013, 3.9.
Yeah. And so, you know, and he still was the focal point of the offense.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the dominant player that he was those first two seasons. So I'm saying if you exclude, just take the player that he was those years minus those two, first 2 years, it's something different. It's something different. Taylor Lewan's been great and stayed great the whole time. And Delanie Walker has been unbelievable since he got here. So I took Lewan, and they've both been to three Pro Bowls, by the way, in this decade.
This is true.
And Delanie should have been to four.
Yes.
And so it then became Lewan and Walker for me.
Okay.
And ultimately, I it could be either one because I think they're both great players. I had to go with the guy who touched the football and also everything he means to this team, you know, as far as his persona, his leadership, his dominance, his consistency, what he means to the quarterback.
You saw when he wasn't here.
Yeah. To me, Delanie Walker is the best offensive player of this decade. What's your opinion on that?
I mean, I'm looking at the stats right now. I would agree with you with Chris Johnson. I think he exploded in those couple of years, and we all knew what he was doing and had success here. But then it wasn't the same after those couple of years.
No. I mean, look, 1,000 yards for running back is okay. I mean, it's 64 yards a game or something like that.
Yeah.
For a guy who touched the ball as much as he did, you know, that should happen. When a tight end has a 1,000-yard season, that's like a running back going for like 1,600
right.
or 1,700 yards.
Which he had 1,088 yards in 2015, yes. six TDs.
And then he's had three other seasons over 800 yards, which is very good for a tight end.
And when you break it down, because I think Lewan is a solid player.
He is so athletic.
He is. But when you break it down and you look at these two, the tiebreaker for me is like what you said. When I hear Delanie Walker, I automatically put him with the Titans. I put him as somebody on this team who just knows how to be the guy.
Yep.
And that to me is going to be the tiebreaker between the
knows
two.
Knows he's the guy. Knows and if you don't know he's the guy, he's going to tell
which
you he's the guy.
Which I love.
He is. You know what?
I love that confidence.
You know, when we think about players and we think about moments, you know, like Steve McNair getting dragged down by two guys and shaking him off in the Super Bowl, Eddie George powering through a tackler at the goal line in the Super Bowl. Delanie Walker's got a couple of great plays. He made a guy from the Packers a human Pez dispenser. he got hit by two Cowboys and bounced off for like a 50-yard touchdown. But the play that I remember most, which kind of defines his reign with the Tennessee Titans, I think it was Marcus Mariota's second year, maybe his third year. They were in Indianapolis, and he had four and then five Colts trying to cover him on like a 30-yard out.
Oof.
I mean, there were Delanie is running down the field,
and, they're like
and there's five guys in white, running behind him because he got behind all of them.
So he was
a tight end
catch up.
Who got behind all of them, and Marcus drops it in and drops a dime on him with five guys covering him. And the reason that's so big is because he can make that play, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, that's how much he means to the quarterback, that he's willing to throw into quintuple coverage to get him the football.
It says something, doesn't it?
Yes. And as I have said, and I will publicly proclaim right here, my great failure in covering the 2018 Tennessee Titans was not recognizing the magnitude of the Delanie Walker injury week one.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely sidelined that whole offense. And they never really recovered, averaging whatever they averaged, 18, 19, 20 points a game.
Yeah.
Whatever it was wasn't good enough. Defensively, look, you know, Brian Arakpo, Derek Morgan, Michael Griffin's got 17 interceptions this decade and a lot of tackles. Wesley Woodyard has been a great pickup from the Denver Broncos, but this one's easy. I mean, Jarrell Casey is the best defensive player of this decade, and I don't think you can even debate it. I mean, the names that were thrown at me to debate it didn't even play in this decade.
Right.
Okay, when people are like, Javon Kearse, Keith Bullock, I'm like, it's of this decade. You know, because those other guys are good players. And Wesley Woodyard's been a really good player.
He's been awesome. He gets younger with each year. I don't know how.
It's incredible. But, I mean, Jarrell lives behind the line of scrimmage. And he continues to redefine his body and continue to perform at the same level.
And that's what I think I've been so impressed with since getting here. Even in the couple years I've been here, like Jarrell is just always wanting to become a better player.
Yes.
And he's already.
And he's been paid twice.
I know. He's already so good, but that doesn't satisfy him. He's just always like wants to be better. And I just respect that of a guy like this that, you know, is not really the most – I guess Drell is an interesting guy to talk to. He's not always like –
Oh, he's got a lot of layers to him.
He does. You have to kind of peel those off of him. But he just does it for me. I mean, he's just somebody that I look to and I'm like, that guy is a football player.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? That's a great way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at him, he doesn't look like J.J. Watt.
No.
He doesn't look like Javon Curse. He doesn't look like Kevin Carter. I mean, mm-hmm. he's 6 feet tall and he's 300 pounds. And when he got here, he was shaped like a human hippity hop.
But I know, you show me those pictures.
Yeah, I mean, he has totally redefined himself. He's still kind of a squattier guy. But you know who else is? Aaron Donald.
Yes.
And these guys get low, they get strong, mm-hmm. and they make plays, and they're arguably two of the best, they're unquestionably two of the best interior defensive linemen in the game. So, that was an easy one. So I've got Delanie Walker and Jarrell Casey as my best two Titans.
I like those picks.
And there were some people like, it's very sad that we didn't have a quarterback in the mix. And I would agree with that, you know, because it needs to be, you know. But, I mean, when you've got Zach Mettenberger and Matt Hasselbeck for a year and Jake Locker who couldn't
Jake
get
Locker,
past
injury. Jake Locker, who I said would never make it in the NFL.
Jake could make plays.
I know, Corey.
He just couldn't stay healthy.
I knew that at Washington. I knew he wasn't going to be able to maintain his health.
His ligaments were just wound tighter than everybody else's. I mean, because that's the difference between him and Marcus,
mm-hmm.
is every one of Jake's injuries was ligament
related.
His hip popping out, knee injury, thumb, it's always ligaments popping. You know, Marcus, you've got bruised ribs, you've got a broken leg.
A nerve.
Yeah, a nerve. I mean, it's just kind of freak stuff that, mm-hmm. that's been happening. And so they're different. In that perspective. All right, we've got the NBA draft coming up tonight.
Whew.
Tonight.
I'm pumped.
Five local players? Is that what we're looking at? Five? Possibly six? Yeah, six. Possibly.
What's up? Tennessee on the map.
I don't think all six will come off the board, but you never know. We're going to talk about a couple of them with new Belmont basketball coach Casey Alexander when we come back. He, of course, coached Garrison Matthews at Lipscomb and coached against Dylan Windler for years. We're going to get his take on what they bring to the next level and what their chances are. This is Corey Curtis and Kayla Anderson filling in for Darren and Donick, and you are listening to Nashville's best sports talk, ESPN 102.5 The Game.